There we go. Go ahead, Sherry.
Okay, so this is impact bargaining with the UCF-UFF team and the UCF-BOT team. It is August 3rd at 2020, 1:30, roughly, o'clock. And we are discussing two MOUs, one relating to the effects of COVID on faculty, and the other, well, we're not going to be discussing racism. We sort of divided up the work on this, and I took on the COVID MOU, and Chuck was taking on the racism MOU. He really wanted it, and we all, our team had suggested that he reach out to
Kent Butler.
Kent Butler and Nancy Myers, because we don't want to, well, for one thing, because they may have great ideas, but also because we don't want to get in the way of something that Kent might already be planning, or Dr. Butler might already be planning. And there might be opportunities for to share, and, you know, things that they may already have planning. And that has taken a little bit longer than we anticipated, being able to get everybody together and meet and get on the same page. So, and as you know, Chuck can't even be here till 2 today. So we will postpone that one until the next session. Also, we've got a little bit of an issue. I don't think it's any big secret. It's not been publicly posted, but the provost was in the hospital most of last week. So that's made it difficult to have to get in touch with him on some of these issues. So, but I did take a crack at the COVID MOU, and I think Sarah is going to drive and put up what we came up with so everybody can see it on the screen.
Oh, make sure, Brianna, you give her the ability, or did you already talk about that?
I already did.
Okay.
Okay, we shortened this considerably. We moved some things around, consolidated some sections. So I'm not going to try to go through and compare with the last one that you put on the table, you know, like number by number, or I didn't try to do redlining at some point because it just got to be kind of overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I will go through our proposal, our counter proposal, and highlight the things that I think are most important. We kept almost everything in the original statement. In fact, I don't think we changed. I think we left out the last line because we are consulting on a regular basis on these things. And then we kind of consolidated a couple of sections into what we're calling assignment and evaluation, because we sort of had those in different places. Mm-hmm. And we modified the statement about, you know, essentially what you referred to at one time and sort of jokingly as please don't lay us off section. But basically we are, you know, we kept the aspirational statement that we, you know, the faculty, staff, and students rely on, you know, university education, that the reductions in university funding can have a negative effect on our local economy, and that Florida and the nation depend on educated and skilled workers. We said we will strive to continue investing in UCF during the economic downturn. And that's basically what the president had sent out about a week ago, and he said that is his, you know, number one priority is to, even though he's a very strategic guy in a lot of ways, and his communications, I think, have kind of shown that his idea is, yes, we are facing difficult times, and we may have to make some changes that we would otherwise choose not to make, but I can tell you that his priority is to, he's focusing on the core academic enterprise of the university, and he doesn't, you know, he wants to make strategic investments in that segment of the university community so that when we pull out of this pandemic, we are pulling out in a position to be stronger and to move forward from a stronger position. So that's kind of his core idea, is that we're going to keep on investing in UCF. And I don't think, well, I will say, I won't go further than that. I don't think I have the authority to. I think we've retained the idea that we will continue to have open negotiations on potential work modalities for the fall and spring semesters. Hopefully we won't be doing this in the spring, but one never knows. We will try to the extent, as much as we possibly can, to allow faculty to work in a remote setting in the fall. I don't think anybody wants to force people to come back to work who just absolutely are scared to death to, but you can't guarantee that everybody gets to their choice of what they're going to be doing in the fall. Again, to the extent absolutely possible, we want to keep the labs and offices open. The research procedures and safety protocols we've already initiated. They're in place in all of the labs and offices, and we are certainly going to keep those in place. Let's see. Okay, so we kept the idea that yes, if we are going to change our assignments for spring 2020, that we should communicate those by December 5th, if at all possible. And you had wanted supervisors to take into account that research routines may have been disrupted during the pandemic and in evaluating faculty, and we agreed with that. Our only caveat there is that, as always, we have to, evaluations have to be aligned with the department units' AESPs. We can't really do much about those, and those are driven by faculty. And we like your idea that faculty are encouraged to have proactive discussions with their chair or immediate supervisor bring impacts to their research or creative scholarship. We kept your idea that supervisors are encouraged to request a consultation meeting with a faculty member to review their online teaching rather than just dropping in, although under the current collective bargaining agreement they have that right, but we're encouraging them to request a consultation meeting in lieu of that. Should a course need to transition to another modality, we will certainly do everything we can to mitigate the disruption and any adverse results for the student or the faculty. And the university will continue to provide support and training for remote instruction. Intellectual property rights, we just combined the two bullets and said maintain rights to all course content, including content required to be presented in an online format as provided in Article 18 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement. On the issues of public health and safety, let's see if I can scroll down here. What we did here is we kind of changed the focus of this. Instead of saying, all the things that we need to do, we focused on, okay, here's what, because I don't think people have been paying much attention, and I understand why. There's a ton of stuff coming at you all the time how much we've already done. And, there was a line in the original thing that we'll need to spend more money to hire cleaning people and to hire faculty, to upgrade facilities and so forth. And we already invested about $5 million and we're not done investing as this thing continues. So we listed just a sampling of all the things that we've done. And then we gave the coronavirus website where people can go and see everything else. I think when people look at it and really see in one spot all the stuff that we've already done, mm-hmm. should make them feel a lot better. I mean, it made me feel better when I started looking at it. I was like, oh, I didn't know we were fogging classrooms with antivirus spray every night. I mean, and we continue, it's hard to list all of this in an MOU because we're continuing to do stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a couple of weeks ago that we decided we would repurpose our vending machines and put masks in. and provide that at no cost. And I think we're the only university that has at least acknowledged that they're doing that. I don't know of any other university that is. So this will change, but and that's why it's important to have that one central website where people can go. It's easy to find, and it'll tell you more than you'll ever want to know. Mm-hmm. Security, space, and maintenance of equipment. We left a lot, I think, this fairly well intact. Let's see. Basically, so that the university recognizes that if we're going to require people to work at home, we have to give them the material, the equipment to do it and to maintain it. And if the same thing we'd said in the last one, the supervisor tells you, oh, well, you really need to buy this or that or the other thing, then they either have to be used, purchase it with a P card, or they'll be reimbursed for them. So we're not expecting people to go out and buy a bunch of fancy equipment in order to make this process work. Okay, you want to scroll down a little bit? And I know you have questions, but I'm just trying to get through this and let everybody. So on the social and emotional well-being, we sort of collapsed a lot of things into this one thing, because honestly, we have a lot of resources out there, and we want people to go to those resources. We want people to call the employee assistance program or to go to the health advocate website. And we think that is, if they need help, that they can get it at those places. Safe working conditions. We basically said, we didn't see the need to basically reiterate everything that's in the CARES Act, or the Family First Corona Response. We just said that if you are fall into a high-risk group, as defined by the CDC, we will do everything we can to have you work at home. If you have disabilities, we certainly encourage you to, contact OIE. And are encouraged to use the leave available. It's still available. Well, I guess it's still available. Yeah, it hasn't run out yet. I'm trying to think, because we've been going through so much politically in the last week with stuff running out, unemployment benefits and so forth.
Yeah, those benefits are still available till December 31st, absent any kind of extension.
I thought so. So Sarah kind of worked on this one a little bit. And if you want to jump in here, Sarah, I'm happy for you to, but.
Sure. So I know there were some references to the CARES Act. I think that was probably meant to be the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, given what was quoted. And so I just included, rather than listing kind of verbatim the eligibility criteria for that leave, just said, employees are encouraged to use that leave when they're eligible, and included the HR link to the HR page discussing the eligibility criteria for those two types of leave, which are still available until the end of the year, and may be expanded given where the pandemic is in the next few months. And that in general, we're encouraging employees to speak with their supervisors in HR about any kind of alternative or flexible working arrangement. Maureen Bender, our chief of HR, sent out an email a couple of weeks ago saying that all supervisors have been asked to be as flexible as possible with employee schedules. And we know a lot of people are in a lot of different types of situations regarding their family members at home, whether that be a parent, a child, or their own health condition. So when it comes to an employee's own health condition, we think it's important to keep the conversation going with the supervisor and reach out to OIE if you feel like you have a disability that may need accommodation, or even if you're not sure, given your health condition, or reach out to HR if you have a serious health condition and need leave. So there's lots of places to go if you are feeling, or someone in your unit is feeling, that fear about coming back to campus given their underlying conditions. So we want to be able to accommodate those, but we can, those offices will be able to help sort those requests in the right direction.
Yeah. And I don't know, be about the end here. I'm not sure.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's the end.
Yes, that's the end. And we will, of course, if we need to, I think this runs through December 23rd, we said, because we think that's the last day of classes. You know, if this thing continues, we'll, of course, be back here doing this again in January or December, whenever. So I will, you know, take questions, and if you want to take a break and talk to your team about it, and, you know, maybe come up with, you know, maybe you want to talk first before you present questions, but whatever.
I have a couple questions right now, but then I'll go into caucus with my team, and then we'll probably have more questions coming back. Mm-hmm. But my first one was, I know in the spring one, we had talked about tenure clock extensions or pauses. Mm-hmm. Will that continue that practice into spring? I mean, into fall 2020?
I think that was something that we wanted to talk to you about, because Jana, I mean, on the one hand, what's the deadline for, if you were supposed to go up this spring, we've extended it to
September, I think.
September. We're not opposed to extending that, but at the same time, we don't want this to become, we can't just keep extending tenure indefinitely. And we don't really know how many people will have even taken advantage of this extension.
It's hard on the committees if you crunch it too much.
Yeah, so we're sort of trying to say, okay, let's see what happens with this one, and if we really feel like we need to do it again. And, you know, that's something we can have further discussion about, but that's kind of, you know, Jana was a little feeling like, well, you know, I don't know. We don't really know how well this is working now, how much we're using this now, before we automatically say we'll extend it. Let's kind of see where we are.
Okay. Just because I've heard from professors, tenure earning professors in particular, that they're, I think I mentioned this before, that some of the publishing houses in Europe have closed. And so they're just waiting. They're in wait mode. And they are working on other stuff like articles, but there's certain departments where books count more than the articles.
Yeah, I know.
Having that issue with book publishers.
Yeah, and as I said, that's something that we are open to having more discussions about. I took it out because I didn't have a green light to just automatically extend it. And I think that, you know, we may need to have Jana come in and talk and kind of work some things out and see what we need to do.
Yeah, since promotion is over the scope of someone's entire career, I certainly think that they should explain what's happening in their file right now. So that's just something to consider.
Okay. No, it's true. It's just since cumulative progress evaluations is usually done by a committee. So some of the tenure earning, I'm a little concerned that, you know, in the committee, someone might say, well, they should have found another publisher, and, you know, they want to go with the leading press, you know, so they don't want to go with some other publisher. that's what I mean. Those issues are coming up.
The other thing that we should...
Marie, I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry. I still think that we should put that language in the MOU to avoid any misunderstanding between the faculty and the committee. If that language is in the MOU backed up by the administration, you know, I think it's a very, like, I love to use the word compassionate. In this time, it is really hard for people to even know what's up and what's down. So people need assurance, reassurance and compassion. And I don't think it will cost the university anything just to put that language in an MOU that, you know, if things do not change by a certain date, you know, we will consider such and such action. I think it would be a good thing.
Well, tenure is also a case-by-case basis because it's so specialized. So we'll have to continue to talk to Jana about what's available. And again, it is the scope of one's entire career. That's what the CPEs are for.
But I get it. I'm not, as I said, this is not a hard and fast no. This is, we want to think more about it.
Right. My second question was, and I sent an email about this, but I guess it's a concern from several of our members about returning to campus by a certain date in August. I guess the email sent out that people saw, and that it was forwarded to me. I didn't actually receive it. Someone else did. That international faculty or students need to be back by a certain date in August, or they will not be hired, or they will not be re-enrolled.
Ivana, I sent something to you about that. That was okay. A miscommunication. Someone didn't send you the entire email. That was for grad students.
Oh, okay.
So I did respond to you that. I think it was, you know what? I have no sense of time these days. It feels like it was a long time ago, but it could have been just last week or even 2 weeks ago. Okay. I'm so sorry, but I did respond to you on that. That was someone had taken what they sent you out of context. It was for grad students.
Okay, not professors. Okay. All right. Okay, and then the other question, of course, I have to ask this one, is regarding the stipend. So was that considered at all at the administration level?
The provost nixed that. Mm.
Okay. All right. So did somebody already email this MOU to me or to the team?
We certainly can.
Yeah, we actually just finished working on this at 1:15 today, and I had a 1 o'clock meeting, as you know. So, but we can certainly get it out to you right now, I think.
Okay, all right, thank you. Okay, so
can I ask a question?
Oh, yes, please.
Sure. I just would like to know what is the provost rationale for nixing, or the word that you used, the stipend that they asked for. Because I thought it was relevant. So I just want to know what he said, to take it out.
All right, hold on a second. Well, I'm trying to find my copy. I don't think I have it. Well, in terms of getting a stipend for participating in training, his rationale was, we didn't require people to do this. If we require people to do it, that's one thing, but we didn't. We didn't assign it. So, we're not going to, we don't provide money to people who take training voluntarily. So, and I don't remember there was another piece of the stipend.
If you want to teach entirely online, you need to have some training. You're not allowed to teach entirely online if you don't have training.
Well, you have to go through, IDL? I can't remember. And I think there is something that's already associated with that. But this was an additional stipend, if I recall. I'm trying to think.
What about the extra burden? The extra burden faculty have?
Sorry, Sherry. Oh, sorry, Marie. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to know what you thought about the extra
Well,
have to be at home and using electricity and, sharing our internet and all these little things that, can add up.
Well, I think those apply to pretty much everybody at the university at this point. We're all doing that. And I don't know how much in terms of internet usage. are very many.
Many of us had to buy a lot of things. For example, I had to buy a camera. I had to buy a microphone, you know, things like that, that I usually use in the classroom, but obviously I couldn't go, or my office. So I know, and I'm not the only one. Many of us had to buy things like that. And, you know, everything adds up, especially since everything was gone already. By the time we went to get, you know, the cameras, they were, you know, it was just a few and they were exorbitant, right?
You request reimbursement for your camera, webcam?
I know they sent something that said that you have to have permission before, but by that time I had already got it.
Right, but did you request reimbursement? I know you didn't get permission before, but I mean, you were acting expeditiously. Did you request it?
No.
Okay. If you could give that a try at least and let us know how it worked out.
The other thing is when we are on campus, teaching on campus, we're using the infrastructure of campus, internet and everything. We're not using our home internet 100% to teach. So now that we all have to be at home teaching and doing our research, etc., can the university look at this in terms of extra burden? While the university does not spend that much money on the internet anymore, or does not spend extra money on on things like water, or, you know, for flushing the toilet and all of these little things that do add up. So can't this money be rerouted to give the faculty something to recognize, you know, that we're in this together and we're really doing our part to bring the best, you know, education to our students. So can the university do that? I was thinking, I mean, even the president gave a stipend to people, you know, because of this extra burden. What can the university do for the faculty?
University is not exactly saving money either, though. $5 million for the plexiglass things and everything, and they are still keeping the lights on. They didn't change their internet.
But that money came, I think I let Giovanna, I don't want to take over. So, and I was just curious. I really wanted to know what it is that, you know, what is the administration thinking, you know, in those terms?
Well, I think in my mind, the big picture is we have been thanked extensively for the major effort required to cope with the COVID pandemic. And there's no denying that it was a major effort. And details like usage of internet, you know, water for flush toilets, this is really not the big picture. The big picture is the massive amount of work and effort to rework courses. And given that work, additional work on the part of faculty, it seems an additional stipend to the faculty would be very appropriate.
Well, I will certainly convey that thought back to the administration.
Just to be clear though, Kevin, would that be for the teachers that aren't already teaching online 100%? Is that who you're suggesting?
I think it should be across the board to all in-unit faculty.
So even employees who were 100% teaching online, you believe they should also receive this stipend?
All in-unit faculty.
That's okay. All right.
Nina has something to say. Nina?
I actually received today an email from the departmental assistants that require, well, it's not required, but ask, I don't know how obligatory it is, to install Skype for Business at our cell phones and keep this Skype for Business open during work hours, and to answer our calls to our phones in the office. So my cell phone have a Skype, my personal Skype, and I think that Skype for Business would interfere. My cell phone, it's very, very full. It's probably 85, maybe 90% full with the different apps and stuff. And so I just, it was very, very confusing to me how my cell phone can be used to install Skype for Business. It's not that I am opposed. I will probably make a space for my cell phone. I remove some of my apps to install Skype for Business just to accommodate. But it was, so that is my personal cell phone. And so there is instruction to install something from UCF.
So Nina, the computer you're using now, that should be able to take the phone calls just like normal. If you have Skype for Business telephone, is that what you normally use, or do you have a telephone?
I use this one typically.
No, that's your personal cell phone, right?
Right. Yeah.
No, I know, but in your office, you have Skype for Business on your computer, right?
Yes.
So when my phone still rings to my computer, even though I'm at home, the phone still rings here. You don't need to put it on your personal cell phone.
No, it did not work in my office because my computer did not have sound card. And so I use just a physical phone to pick up.
Okay, so that's what I was asking. Did you have a physical phone?
Yes, okay. Yes, right. Because I did not have, and maybe I can have it at my laptop, which I use at home, which is UCF laptop, and I do all the work from this. So I, of course, I have no problem, but it's kind of, I just wanted to let Sherry know that there is this request, this
right.
type of the request.
I think it's you should not, be able to do that through your laptop.
Yeah, it's not that I am opposed of anything, but I just...
I understand, Nina.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So just a couple of things, Sherry. So that, you know, you heard from three of my team members regarding the COVID stipend. And the reasons for it is like the extra expense of it all, actually four of them. Yeah, and also the tremendous work that it was to rework all the courses. Other things as well, I know that you'll relay that we are thinking of doing this across the board for all in-unit faculty, because even online teachers had to also make some changes as well as to how to do things. And some of them actually received a lot of students who were more accustomed to face-to-face, so they had to change their kind of style from solely online to now actually calling students by phone, on their personal phone. And I had a few incidents, I'm also a coordinator in my department, where students then kind of abused the usage of the phone, you know, text in the middle of the night, why aren't you responding to me? I had one professor who gave his personal phone number, the student was calling every hour. So we are talking about, so also online professors who are accustomed to only teaching online now also had to change their style of teaching, and some of them also had some accustomed to just being online, so they weren't, you know, they didn't have the kind of phone personality, and I think that might have had something to do with why they were getting called so frequently. The other thing too is regarding what Nina was saying, I'm also getting a lot of people are using their personal computers still and cell phones, and I know we had talked about this before that they shouldn't do that, they should try to get the UCF stuff, but UCF is really backed up. So I do have, and I'll tell you because I like to brag, my Alienware M51, okay? It's a super computer. It's a computer that runs like entire things. So I have no problem with that stuff, but I did have to wait 4 months for my computer to get it back from the university. So when the university closed, I ordered, I had it in April. I had to wait and tagged and everything. So I guess what we're saying is that the COVID stipend would help with people for the immense amount of work that they have had to do because of COVID, also offset some of the major costs they're doing because of internet and water. And then of course, some of them are just in waiting mode, waiting for their computer until, I guess, somebody from the IT office can finally install their computer at home. In which some of the IT people, I will say, have been doing a wonderful job. But when I did go to pick up my Alienware, the problem is only two could work in the office. There's seven of them, but only two could work at any one time. So that's why it makes it so difficult. So I think some of those who are using like personal phone or personal laptop, like what Nina was mentioning, is they're just in waiting mode. They're waiting to get it. So the stipend would offset like some of those costs that they're for the extra work, but then offset costs for things that people are buying because they needed to expeditiously get ready for remote work. Okay. All right. So we'll go into caucus, and I will, let me see. give us 20 minutes and then we'll come back.
Take as much time as you need.
Okay. All right. I'll text both of you, both Charlie and you. Okay. I'll see you guys a little bit later.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, Chuck's back. Hi, Chuck. I didn't see you come in. I guess I saw, I heard the ding dong, but I guess I didn't pay attention because I was listening.
Brannis, can you move those to the waiting room that are still with us?
There's a few issues. So I guess just for right now in the immediate, we're definitely going to have to reschedule another time to meet again to discuss the COVID MOU. There's some things we want to go over a fine-tooth comb. There's some big questions that we have right now that I'd like to ask you, so you can ask the administration before we leave.
Okay.
So Sherry, the first one was regarding fogging the classrooms. So this is safety in the workplace. I wondered more about like the toxicity of it, if it was toxic, if it's something that remains until like the next morning. So that was my first question. I know you might not have answers to this. The second question is we had among our team is if about what happens in between classrooms. Because I know I'm assuming they're not fogging it, but how are they keeping the air clean? And also, are we requiring all our students to wear masks? And if they refuse to wear a mask, what is the, I don't want to say punishment, but what is the, what do we do for that type of transgression?
Is that something you want in the MOU that you're asking to put in there, or is that just a question?
It's about the question and probably something we'd want to have in the MOU, because these were all questions related to like public safety, because some people are very scared. We had one example where somebody actually went to Classroom Research 1 and was later told by a colleague that the person they had been talking to actually tested positive for COVID. So I guess a lot of people are pretty scared about this. So our next questions that we had is...
Giovanna, can I add one thing, please?
Yes.
I know the question about students not wearing masks is covered in the emergency policy that was published about a month ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly what it says about it, but I know it's covered in there.
I know it says that, but you know, if we have students who refuse, like what kind of...
It's covered in there. I want to actually review it.
There's like a three-step, I was trying to find it to quote it right now, but there's like a three-step plan about kind of like how you escalate, like first ask the student to put a mask on. If they refuse, then there's like another step. And then if they refuse, there's a third step. I wish I had those memorized, but they have thought of this. And yes, they are definitely required to wear them. That's and they good. Have thought so, about what to do if they refuse.
So given that this is already a nice policy, you won't mind putting it in the MOU, right?
In general, we were trying not to just repeat things that have already been agreed to. I mean, we could put a line that says incorporates it or something. I'm not
where we can find it, because I mean, this bargaining team, we read all the emails, I go to the coronavirus site, and I don't always find these things. And I think, you know, that you said it, I think I do sort of remember, but it took me a while to find this three-step plan. It wasn't like obvious. So if even if you're just going to put the link to it, that would help a lot.
Okay.
And the other thing too, and this is a very good question, is related to, I know that Deborah German put something out, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but put something out about contact tracing, but there seems to be, to at least this team, that there is no real process in place. And also if somebody does test positive for COVID, let's say the professor does that mean that all the students should also put themselves into quarantine for the next 14 days, the professor, plus any classrooms that came afterward? I mean, is there a policy in place for that?
There is, as far as contact tracing, that I believe Sherry can correct me if I'm wrong, but Student Health is handling that. And Dr. Dyken, I think, was the one who, Dr. German may have sent out something too, but Dr. Dyken also sent out a message about contact tracing. And he would have details on exactly how they're doing it. I don't know off the top of my head in that hypothetical that you gave, like how deep it would go. It would probably depend on how close everybody was and how sustained the contact was.
Yeah.
And if it was, sorry, Marie, I think you're speaking, but you're on mute.
Marie, you're on mute.
Okay.
You can't unmute yourself? Oh, no.
It's a process.
Okay. I say we could try charades. It might take a while.
I was just asking for faculty. So we talked about students. What happens if a student is sick, you know, but what happens if the faculty has the virus in the classroom? Does the faculty take himself or herself? I mean, it's not written anywhere exactly what's going to be done. What are the steps?
Yeah. So just that's what we discussed, like the process of what happens if somebody is test positive for COVID.
Okay.
I mean, we understand that they would quarantine themselves, but does that mean everyone they've been in contact? How will we contact those people? And is it okay if they all quarantine themselves? Because I don't know. We just imagine that a lot of people are going to be quarantining themselves by the end of the semester, at least once. So those were our work in safety questions. Also, I know that FIU had something where the professor could actually clean the classroom if they wanted to, and I had something that in the MOU. And thinking, so if a professor comes to a classroom, are there going to be cleaning products in the classroom? Or?
I think there are, but I need to check on that.
Okay. Yeah, because the concern was, you know, do they really want to touch the screens or the buttons and everything? There's always that fear. I mean, of course, they could also wear gloves, but, you know, perhaps they want to spray or something with Lysol. And the other two things, of course, we talked about, and I'll bring up the, is regarding AASC. We'll bring new language to you, and we're wondering if we could set up a time for next week. Because we discussed a couple other areas related to research and how to think about ASAPs in the sense of like we might need to prorate. Like for instance, if somebody lost 2 months of their lab work or their research and then they communicate with their chair and what does that mean? Perhaps that could be reflected in the ASAP, but maybe there could be also some sort of like, because sometimes some ASAPs are just quantitative. You know, you put like a little check mark and, or it's explicit, like you must have 2 articles or you must have a book in order to, and that's actually in my department. We actually say you need a book to make progress toward your tenure. It's very explicit. And when you don't, you know, there's issues of potentially getting fired and everything. So we wanted to just in departments or in areas where it's very explicit what the measures are, or if they're quantitative measures, that we're able to somehow prorate them, especially in discussion with the chair. But we wanted some of that language in the MOU. I apologize for not being able to articulate very well. We're still thinking through how to actually do that, but we're thinking of a plan. And then the other, of course, is the COVID stipend. If we could continue to have a conversation about that, because as my team has presented, there's several reasons why, you know, as faculty, and I know that the president and the provost have been very grateful for, you know, doing a lot of adaptation to the new situation. I know it's not UCF's fault, it's not Florida's fault about COVID or anything, but it would be nice to have a type of stipend that is shared with all the in-unit faculty. All of them have been working very hard in their own way, and also just the mental exhaustion from, you know, just daily feelings of like, you know, everything that goes on all around us and how it affects our work. Okay. Oh, and I think that was it for the MOU. So I just wanted to schedule a new time. And then I had 2 more follow-up things regarding, here, could I share my screen? Regarding what I mentioned before about professors that need to be on campus by August 8th. Let's see. So where's that email? I just set it up.
Yovana, I just sent you, during the break, I sent you the email that had HR's response. I sent it to you during the break. Can you look at it real quick?
Oh, okay. Because this is what Nina sent me here. Let me share. Let's see. Oh, there it is. All right. So, okay. Say August 24 for fact. So this is what... I don't know who this person is.
Rodrigo. But I know who Rodrigo is.
Okay, so from Rodrigo, this was sent to Nina. So this
for all faculty.
It says that all faculty need to be in the United States.
Mm-hmm. By August 8th.
Right. And if not, and they need to talk to HR to explain why. And they talked about that already. So if you have anybody who's not back by August 8th, they need to contact HR and work it out with them. There's tax reasons, right, Sherry? Isn't that why?
No.
It wasn't tax?
Mm-hmm. No. Okay. Can you please just explain what is the reason and what does it mean? All UCF employees must be upon the beginning of the fall contract employment. That is start day, it's August 8th, which is Saturday.
Yeah, it's always August 8th of every year.
Yeah, Saturday. Why do we need to be in the United States on Saturday, August 8th?
All right, let me look at the email that I sent to Yovana, just during the break. Hold on just a second.
Well, yeah, it may be to do with tax reasons now that I'm looking at it. But let me, I will follow up on that.
Okay, so it is something that faculty have to be on campus by August 8th. Otherwise, speak to
HR. That's not what it says. It says they have to be in the United States.
The intent was we cannot employ individuals, generally speaking, who are residing outside the U.S. due to taxation and liability issues. So if we have somebody who's out of the country, they need to talk to HR. That's all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would it be possible to send that email to all employees?
I sent it to Yovana while you guys were at caucus. She just has to look at it.
Okay. I will.
Charlie, it would be good for us to know how it is different from previous years, because, you know, the taxes have always been the same.
Yeah, that's, I don't think it is different than previous years. I think
so if the situation is the same as previous years, then we know what to do.
Yeah, yeah. You need to let your supervisor know that you're not in the country, and then we need to figure things out. And I think there's special attention on it now because of the leadership that's in place.
Right.
So this email here from Rodrigo is actually incorrect then, because he doesn't talk about the alternative that you're suggesting of contacting your supervisor. He just says flatly that all UCF employees must be in the United States for faculty August 8th.
Okay, so what I keep saying is that's what it is normally. We need to be inside the United States. We need to be here and on contract on August 8th. If you are not here, then we need to contact HR, but we're assuming that that's not the norm, that you need to be in the United States, and that's what we're going to ask people to do, I believe, in order to go with the current leadership that's out of our hands.
Right. I'm just pointing out that your words with qualifiers like normally are not present in this email.
Yeah, I didn't write Rodrigo's email. He may have been condensing something. I don't know. He's an administrative assistant in MAE. So I'm
okay. So he needs to perhaps, or you need to perhaps send out a correction so that people will know which version to believe.
So if Yovana will forward what I sent, it's mm-hmm. it's directly from Maureen, what she said would happen. So she said that they were supposed to send out a correction. I don't recall seeing it, but there's been a lot going back and forth.
Okay, so my primary email is going to be Yovana Y. Pineda. So did you send it elsewhere? Because I'm not seeing it.
All right, hold on. Let me go back. I usually send things to Trevor, but hold on.
Yovana, are we seeing your entire screen? Is that what you want?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yovana, I sent it to Treasurer at UFF because that's what I always send for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that one is about to be closed. All so, right. Yeah, I guess,
you want me to send it to, I'll send it to Yovana at whatever you want.
Yovana Y. Pineda. Yeah, I'll send it that. So I'll stop. Okay. Yeah, I'll stop.
I see you. Yovana Y. Pineda. I got it.
Yeah, just send it there and then I'll forward it to my team then. Okay. I guess what we're asking is, could the administration send a correction to, or just,
I think that's what it says. Hi, Charlie. The email did come from HR. There should be an email coming out next week clarifying the message was meant for those individuals employed on graduate assistantships. The intent was that we cannot read it. So there were supposed to be an email coming out clarifying what the message was for. I can ask Abby if there's an update.
Okay.
And by the way, Annabelle's group, they sent out an email that asked everyone to send things for reimbursement. So she should be able to get reimbursement for the articles that she bought to do her job.
Okay. All right. I'll let her know. Okay. So I'm just going to send this to everyone on my team. Let's see. Okay. All right. So I'll send that. Okay. So I just sent it to all of you on the call. Okay. So those were things. Okay. That was related to the COVID MOU. Yes. The email that we had talked about. Was there something else? I think, Nina, did you forward me a second email?
Yes, I did. About Skype for Business installation on my cell phone.
Oh, it's just that she received it, and I'll send it to you, Charlie. It's just an email that received that told her how to put Skype Business on her phone, but then her personal phone then became very, very slow because she put this on her phone. But I'll forward it to you after this call. Okay. All right, Sherry, so we will probably be presenting a counterproposal to this.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add or say?
No.
Okay. Anyone from my team have anything else to say?
I'm good.
Good? Okay. Everybody's good? All right. And then Chuck, you're going to be working on the MOU on institutional racism?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then Brianna and Charlie, is there a good time to meet next week? Oh, hi, Brianna, are you there?
What happened to Charlie?
Hello.
Or Charlie? Oh, Brianna, could we schedule, I mean, are you guys amenable to meeting next week to continue to discuss these MOUs?
I'm checking.
I'll let Chuck speak for himself. I don't know if he's going to be ready by next week, but if you want to have a short meeting to discuss the MOU on this one, we might be able to do that.
The MOU on COVID? Okay.
Or we can just, I don't know, Chuck, I'll let you chime in on.
Yeah, I can't guarantee that I'll have something next week. There are some other folks that I've been advised to contact, and I just have not had an opportunity to do that yet.
Yeah.
Okay, but we can have a counter proposal for you by next week for the MOU on COVID.
We can do 1 to 3. Wait, it's in next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
One to three on Monday or Wednesday.
Okay. I'm available Monday or Wednesday. Yeah.
That's good for me.
Pick it out with what we've got because we have to make sure Chuck has enough time to do what he needs to do for turnaround. So. Okay.
Yeah, if you want to meet next week just on COVID, we don't need 2.5 hours to meet on COVID next week.
Yeah, we can do it in 1.5 hours, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
If we just meet on COVID.
Okay, so 1 to 2:30 Monday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Does that work for you, Marie, Nina? Okay, good. Oops, sorry, my pen fell. Okay, so 1 to 2:30 on Monday, August 10th. Okay.
All right.
Okay. And, All right, so I think we're all set there. And then, so I'll send a counter proposal to you so you can see, probably on Monday morning, so just so you can see, and then we can go over it on Monday. The other thing too, this Thursday we meet for salary, so we have a counter proposal as well. We're just reviewing it, the plan is to have it to you by Wednesday.
You know, Yvonne, even I'm okay. Mm-hmm.
What's wrong? Oh, Sherry, you had something to say?
No.
Okay.
All right, should we stop recording then? Or are we done?
I think so. Sherry has to.
No, I'm done.
You're done? Okay, bring down the gavel. Okay.